Sunday, November 13th, 2011.
It's the best blog we can show. Hop on board, we'll take you where you wanna go. We're heading out to
epic. That's how I describe this game on Sunday between the Bears and the Detroit Lions. I would call this game a bona fide epic because you have got the storyline set. And I talked about it on Thursday at the end of my preview column, and I'm going to bring it up here again so I can elaborate. On Monday night, a month ago, the Bears went into hostile territory, into a game where circumstances, I believe, dictated they weren't going to win. False start after false start, mistakes in the secondary. They played about as dreadful a game as they could play, and they were embarrassed on national television. And when they woke up the next morning, and perhaps even before that, Lovie Smith decided, we will not let this happen again. They went out and they kicked the shit out of the Minnesota Vikings. They went over to London, and they played a great game. Maybe they struggled late, but they played a great game against Tampa Bay. And they came out of the bye week and played their most well-rounded, solid game of the year against the Philadelphia Eagles. And now is the conclusion, is the completion of what was a dramatic story. From loss to win, the Lions now come back into Soldier Field. And the Bears can exact revenge. I heard Hub Arkis yesterday say, hey, the Bears can now lose this game to Detroit because they won Monday night. Bullshit. Bullshit. This game is not about wild cards. This game is not about division rivalries. This game is not about anything but pride for the Chicago Bears. They have to exact revenge for what happened in Detroit a month ago. They cannot lose to this team twice in a year. We are not there yet with the Detroit Lions. And yes, if they win the game, it will go a long way towards propelling them into the postseason. But they have to win the game for pride. They have to put the Lions back into their place. And their place right now is the third position in the NFC North. The Bears have an opportunity here. A very good opportunity here to put another team down, to put another wild card win in their pockets. That's great. This game's not about that. This is about revenge, about pride, and we need to see that on Sunday at Soldier Field.
I am joined now by Dave Burkett. He is the Lions beat man at the Detroit Free Press. Nobody's closer to the team than him. And welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, glad to be here.
My first question about the Lions is I've never seen a team transition so quickly from media darling to media villain. And it seemed something got jarred loose when Harbaugh hit Schwartz on the back. Then it went to the Falcons game, the complaints about Matt Ryan, and was he being taunted when he was down? And then Steven Tulloch and the Tebow mockery. And somebody who's close to this team, are they being depicted fairly, or what is this team?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that's somewhat the national, you know, reputation that they're starting to get, the dirty play or the questions about, you know, Schwartz's antics on the field or Sue, you know, taunting players or whatnot. But people in Detroit, they kind of eat that up. I mean, if you think back to some of the most loved sports teams in this city's history. I mean, it's the Bad Boys from the Pistons, and you know the Red Wings were, you know, popular players were Bob Probert or Grindliners or you know players like that. So I think people around here, they kind of relish that. All right, you think we're dirty? Well, that's just you know that's how we are. We're grinders around here. I think that's sort of the reputation, the mentality that a lot of fans have. Now, having said that, you know I know the Lions. They want to toe that line a little bit. I mean, Schwartz doesn't, and he said this publicly plenty of times, that he doesn't necessarily care what the perception of him or his team is publicly. But when it comes to personal fouls or things, you know, in between the lines that may cost the Lions during games, you know, I think they're very wary of that, and they want to make sure that doesn't have any carryover effect.
Is there a certain irony then to the fact that, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, you look at this team and you say, why are they so successful this year? And the answer starts with Stafford and Calvin Johnson, who is putting up an all-time wide receiver number. Is there a certain irony to the fact that it's the defense doing all the talking, and at times they seem like the weak link on this team?
Well, I don't know if that's, you know, completely true. I mean, you're absolutely right that, you know, Calvin's having a monster year, and he's the most unguardable, you know, player in the NFL right now. And Stafford, I mean, for a guy who was, you know, essentially a rookie, played 13 games before the year, to have 19 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, I mean, that's just taking great care of the ball. But the offense does have some weak spots, you know, not much of a running game. The offensive line's had its problems protecting Stafford. And defensively, you know, that's who they want to be up front. They just want to be a nasty team that gets after the quarterback, that creates havoc, that maybe covers up some of the deficiencies that they might have in the back end. And so I think that while that offense has done plenty, I think the defense is actually playing better on a lot of levels, at least more consistently. I think that some of the problems that they've had with falling behind in games, a lot of that is due to struggles on the offensive end.
Has the depiction has been that the running game has really dropped off since Javid Best. Is that fair? Has Javid Best injury really set back the run game?
I think I think losing him is the definite setback. I mean, if you look at the numbers, you know, Maurice Morris and Keelan Williams are actually running the ball pretty well the last 2 weeks, and Morris is averaging, you know, close to 5 yards a carry as his best replacement. But the thing that Javid does that those two don't is really make you know, defenses pay attention to him, is because of the explosive element that he adds. You know, it's not always in the running game. It's in the, you know, passing game too. They like to swing him out in the flat and do some of those things. But, you know, you look at his overall numbers, he's averaging almost what Adrian Peterson averages a game in terms of total yards from scrimmage, you know, rushing and receiving. So he's definitely missed. And without him, you know, it's just not an element that defenses have to be very careful about.
When is the expectation that he'd be back on the field? Is there hope in the next few weeks?
You know, I talked to him over the weekend during the bye, and he said he still expects to play this year, and I think the Lions are still holding out hope. You know, they haven't made any moves to put him on injury reserve, obviously, yet, but, you know, they cut their third running back, Elder Buckley, who was only a special teams guy, to bring in Kevin Smith, who, you know, was out of football for the last, you know, half year, you know, a couple days ago. So, I think they're playing this one, you know, pretty cautiously. They're not going to rush him back. He's still a part of their long-term future. Nobody can say for certain if he's going to be back in the next few weeks, but that's the hope.
You know, here's a weird question, because I was doing some sort of Detroit Lion researchy stuff today, and I said, I've heard the defense has struggled, and I looked at the ranking, and I said, there's no way this rush defense is as bad as this ranking is. And then I looked at the actual game, and they just allowed some big runs. It seems
right.
This rush defense allows the big run. Is that because once you get past the second level, the tackling is suspect with the deep backs, or is it over pursuit maybe from the guys up front who are just going after the quarterback every play?
I think it's a little bit of all that. I mean, you know, they really are okay with living with not those big breaks, you know, not the 40 and 50 yard gainers that really hurt them, you know, those gash plays. But, you know, they know that they're going to give up a 10-yard run here, you know, 14-yard run there, plays like that, because of the way they play up front, because of playing that, you know, a little bit of that wide nine, or their defensive line's charge is really to get after the quarterback first. And, you know what, by the way, if you stop the run on the way there, great. So they've been susceptible to that a little bit, but in the back seven, they've had a couple breakdowns, and that's really where those long runs come in. You know, Amari Spaveo, you know, taking a bad angle on a tackle, or Lewis Delmas, you know, their safeties, or DeAndre Levy overrunning the play. It's nothing that, you know, like you said, it's not it hasn't been consistent. I mean, I think they do a decent job most down stopping the run, but, you know, 27th or 28th in the league, whatever you look at, you just can't, you know, that's not a consistent playoff caliber team if you're going to be allowing that many rushing yards every week.
Last question, and this is let's go positive on this one. I think the whole country is thrilled that we are going to have a Lions game on Thanksgiving that matters, and that we're going to have a reason to sit there in that first game, and the Cowboys will not be the centerpiece of Thanksgiving. What does it mean to the fans of this team, the city, to be on display on Thanksgiving where everybody in this country is watching and to know they got a good football team they're going to put out there against the best in the country, but they're going to put a good football team out there and really showcase their wares?
There's a lot of buzz, you know, about anticipation for that game. I mean, you think of what Green Bay could be at that time, too. You know, there's no doubt that people are looking forward to it. But I think even beyond that, you know, just from the beginning of the year, all the buzz that was surrounding this team, because people had high expectations around here. And then to see it kind of come to fruition with the 6-2 start, it's something that, you know, you look at the past decade, the Lions have really been awful, frankly. You know, they 10 straight losing seasons or whatever it's been, haven't made the playoffs since, you know, 1999. And regardless of what happens going forward this year, I think they look at the roster, you know, with all the young talent they have, Sue, Calvin Johnson, Stafford, those guys being 25 or younger, you know, the front office, Martin Mayhew doing some good things, and a coach in Schwartz who, you know, say what you want about his personality. I know he rubs some people the wrong way, but he's a smart guy and he knows what he's doing on the field, and the players like him. I think they look at all that and they think that, you know what, the Lions, frankly, can be they can be a factor for the foreseeable future. So they're proud of that as much as anything, I think.
Well, it's a battle this week between former Matt Millen number one receivers. You got Roy Williams on our side, and we got Calvin Johnson over there, and maybe Carlos
I'll
Rogers
Calvin
will be
in that one.
Yeah, I will as well. You know, Roy has got some problems catching the football. But you know what? We're trying to make Earl Bennett our guy. Okay, thanks, Dave Burkett. Thanks for being on board, and hope to talk to you soon.
No problem. I'll do it again.
We're going to do playoffs this year for the Picks Contest, which is, of course, sponsored by Crispy Creations, Fisheye Vertigo, and the Backyard Bird Company. The playoffs will start after the weekend of December 4th. So the last week of the regular season will be the weekend of December 4th. You have to have at least two perfect weeks to qualify for the postseason. We'll then go bracket style. Believe me, you'll be rewarded if you're way out in front. I will explain that all as we get closer. Jonathan has a two-game lead on Chris and I in the Brothers Contest as we enter, almost astoundingly, week 10. Week 10. As Mike Francesa would say, in the league where they play. For pet.
We're gonna make the pick. So John, Jeff, and Chris gonna make the picks. Sometimes the boys going 3-0. Sometimes the boys going to dose and dough. Most of the time we'll be mediocre.
I've been consistent with the picks. This is my problem so far this year, is that John has just been a little bit better. Gets a game here, gets a game there. He went 1-2, I went 1-2. I need to take advantage of it. John is clearly the best picker right now, but you know what I know about the best picker? The best picker, even when you get that finger real deep, the best picker always gets caught. First pick, easy as cake. Bears, -1.5 over the Lions. I picked them to win by 17 points yesterday. It would just be wrong for me not to take them here. I'm pretty good with the Bears this year. I haven't touched them in the games they've been blown out of, except for the Saints game. I thought they'd play better in that game. I was wrong. That's the only time I've been really dead wrong about this team so far this year, especially from a gambling perspective. Take the Bears, -1.5. Second pick is a points pick. I don't think the Vikings are going to beat the Packers. But I think they can keep that game close. They kept it close at Lambeau. Now we go to Minnesota. Ponder's playing better at quarterback. Peterson's hit his stride now at running back, and I expect him to have a 30-carry game on Monday night. I think they'll make this game closer than people expect. I also think the Packers' defense has just not looked very good here of late. They're due for one of those games where Rodgers doesn't have 125 quarterback rating and rescue the defense. I think this could be the kind of game where Peterson keeps the ball away from Rodgers, keeps the game close into the fourth quarter. I still think the Packers win by 10. I don't think they win by 13.5. Take the Vikings and the points. Third game I'm taking because it's kind of a last stand game, and the Bills are in a last stand situation here. If they lose this game to the Cowboys, there's a good chance the Bills are going to go the other way and end up out of the playoffs and maybe even sub 500. I don't think they're that bad a team, and I don't think this Cowboy team is consistent enough to take with a bunch of points. So I'm going to take the Bills. I'm going to take the 5.5 points. I know they're on the road. They're limited offensively. They can be shaky defensively. But there's just nothing about this Cowboy team that I really believe in. I mean, they struggled for most of the game against Seattle. They pulled away late. Romo's inconsistent late. Now Miles Austin is out, so they're minus a weapon. They don't get the ball to Dez Bryant enough. I don't know. There's nothing about the Cowboys that leads me to believe they're going to string together a couple of consistent efforts in a row. So I'll take the Bills, the Bears, and the Vikings. Eat them with your milk. Let's try to jinx John and reverse the order. Here come Chris's picks.
I'll put that back, baby. You know, baby. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know. Hey, Solon, that's right. We went 3-0 last week, and now we are tied with Uncle Jeff for second place. We warned you, Uncles. We are coming for you. Uncle John, you're next.
Pick number one. Hey, it's Lucas. The Jags are playing the Colts this week. Who is watching this garbage? I'll tell you who. No one. I don't even think the players will be paying attention. This stupid game will probably end up in a 0-0 tie. What is this, soccer? The Colts have their best shot this week at winning a game this season. The defense is playing better. Well, it couldn't get worse. And Pedro Dugarson and Wayne could be huge. So take the Jags, -3. See what I did there? Colts suck, 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 suckity suck. Yeah.
Pick number two. Ravens -6.5 over the Seahawks. The Ravens' offense did a real good job over one of the league's best defenses last week. If the Ravens can play that good again this week, this game will be over quickly. You will see plenty of laylays. The Ravens' defense is the best in the league, and the Seahawks' offense sucks. They just have to stop Marshawn Lynch. That shouldn't be too hard, so the Ravens will win. Take the Ravens -6.5. Let's go, Wiss!
Pick number three. Panthers -3 over the Titans. Okay, last week was the Panthers' bye weeks, so they had 2 weeks to prepare for the crappy Titans. Hopefully during these 2 weeks, they learned how to play defense. What they need to do is stop the run and Chris Johnson. He has been a bit crappy this year, but he is still their best offensive weapon. If they can't stop him, it could be a long day for the Panthers. The Titans' passing game doesn't scare anyone. So stop Chris Johnson, and I promise they win. Cam Newton to Steve Smith will work out just fine. Panthers -3. Cam Newton!
So here are our picks for Week 10. Panthers -3, Jaguars -3, Ravens -6.5.
Vegas got this covered!
You guys are lucky that you went 3-0 last week, because you do know that my love is directly proportional to the way you pick these games.
Okay, guys, bye!
John sucks.
Here we are, another week in the NFL and another week of really tough spreads. There really wasn't a game that jumped out at me. The first game I'm going to highlight, and probably the only one actually I'm going to highlight, is the Giants game. I'm pretty sure my brother Jeff is going with the 49ers here, and his argument's going to be the Giants had an emotional victory last week, left a lot on the table, both physically and emotionally, And the Giants are, I think the Giants are going on the road, West Coast, playing a tough defense. This had, all signs point to this being a letdown game for the Giants. But you know what? I'm going to be the contrarian here and go with this. They're getting 3.5 points. The Giants are a fairly decent team. The 49ers can't generate a lot of offense. You know what? Could it be a letdown game? Absolutely. Would the safe call be bet the 49ers? Yes. But my opinion here is the Giants have showed that they could be a good road team in the past. I'm going to be the contrarian here and say this will not be a letdown game for the Giants. Second game I like is strictly a gut call on my part is the Saints giving 1 point to the Falcons. And you know what? Falcons came off a really interesting game last week, showed a lot of firepower on offense. You know what? That's all fine and good. I'm still going with the Saints. I'm going to go with the proven commodity. Saints, you know, have been inconsistent this year as well, but I'm going to much rather go with a team like the Saints in this situation than the Falcons. Third game I like, and for no particular reason, other than I like the fact I'm getting points here, is I'm going to take the Rams getting 2.5 points from the Browns. You know, the Browns are this year's Jacksonville Jaguars for me. You know, if you've watched this team play offense, it's one of the most horrific shows of offensive firepower in the NFL. You know, it's almost as it's about as predictable as it gets. Taking the Rams. Have a great week, guys. Talk to you later.
So once again, 9 games picked, 9 different teams. I'll take the Bears, Bills, and Vikings. Chris will take the Jaguars, Ravens, and Panthers. John will take the Giants, Saints, and Rams. Remember, you cannot duplicate any of those sets of picks. Good luck to you. Problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. She said it's really not my habit to intrude. The Reverend curses sometimes. Get over it. I have pork chop.
Rant! So I'm sick and irritable, and thanks to the Bears' thoroughly enjoyable victory over the Eagles on Monday, I didn't really have anything substantial to bitch about. So I thought maybe I'd just phone this one in. But then I turn on ESPN Wednesday night. Now, this is a podcast about the Bears, not college ball. And I just recently railed against the Rick Ratification of sports journalism and its moral high horse. And I know that everyone and their brothers already commented on the Penn State thing. But I'm sorry. Watching the students of Penn State riot last night because Joe Pa got fired blew me the fuck away. Now, there are riots when teams lose, there are riots when teams win, but never in the course of fucking human events has a student body rioted because their school fired someone for protecting a petter ass. Holy fucking shit, are you kidding me? Little kids got raped on Penn State's campus, in the locker room, by Joe Pa's coach for over a decade, and you only riot when the motherfucker gets fired? Where was the riot when the news broke? I'd have rioted if they kept him on for Saturday. I'd have rioted because it took him this long to fire him. I'd riot because Joe Pa and the school administration at best looked the other way and at worst buried a 10-year, 20-plus kid's history of kiddie rape in the interest of the football program. Now, college kids are fucking dumb. They're supposed to be fucking dumb. College is a time where society, to a degree, gives you a pass on making dumb decisions. But those dumb decisions are supposed to be drinking too much, sleeping with ugly people, trying some pot, and pretending you're a socialist. Not diddling kids. And not fucking supporting kid diddlers. Again, I'm sorry. I know I sound like Peter King or some asshole for waxing rhapsodic about an era where kids didn't flip news vans because their pedo-protecting coach got fired. I'm sure coaches back in the Holocaust 1950s raped some kids. I'm sure administrators covered it up. And I'm cynical enough to believe that people will protect pederasts if it's in their self-interest. But fucking shit, dude. What about the idealism of youth? Rioting for a fucking child molester? Enraged because a pedo protector got fired over the phone? You know what's worse than getting fired over the phone? Getting anally raped in the shower as a 10-year-old by an adult put in a position of trust and then seeing that guy for the next 10 years enjoy all the perks and privileges of the exalted position in a community that puts football over the protection of the youth. So no, ripping down streetlights while singing school fight songs doesn't strike me as a particularly appropriate reaction to the long overdue, for many fucking reasons, firing of your fucking football coach. I hope you dumb motherfuckers get expelled. And I hope you never fucking have children. Assholes. I have poke shot.
Couldn't agree more with Dave. The way the students have reacted to the firing of Joe Paterno is just about as despicable as what Paterno and Spanier and Curley did all these years, allowing a man they knew to have issues, no matter what they knew. They knew he had issues with children. They knew he had tendencies with children, and they gave him free rein over their college campus. Despicable. And to see those kids out there wasting hours, wasting energy, cheering on Joe Paterno as if he was the one who was done wrong. Why don't you go to the houses of these kids? Find out who these kids were. Find out how their lives are now. Find out about the scars on them that they will never relinquish. Find out about those kids. Then come back and tell me about Joe Paterno, a fucking football coach. I don't care what he did for State College and Penn State. He's a football coach. A great one, yes, but a weak fucking man. Enjoy the game Sunday. Big win coming for the Bears. I see it coming. If you drink, don't drive. See you Monday.
It's the Bears Blog Weekend Show. Hi.